So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Going to begin our program by talking with you about a new documentary from Wisconsin Public Television. It's called Our Birds, and it is a fascinating look at those birds that migrate from elsewhere. We'll find out all the different places, but as we talk with our two guests, and come to Wisconsin, and about the great things about them and about some of the problems that exist because of the long journey they have to make and because of the places where they're located. Couple of guests for you today, Joanne Garrett. Joanne is the producer for Wisconsin Public Television of Our Birds. Joanne, great to have you back.
We're thrilled to be here.
Yes, and also Craig Thompson. Craig is a regional land program supervisor based in La Crosse with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And he was on the program, on this program, about, sometime last year, talking about some of the work that he does in Costa Rica. And I'm really pleased to have you back as well, Craig. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Good morning, Larry. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, this, Joe, why don't you start and talk a little bit about the documentary and why we have it.
I work as a producer for the magazine show called In Wisconsin, which airs Thursday nights at 7:30 on Wisconsin Public Television. And we've been involved in doing magazine stories, and I was doing more on migratory birds and realized, boy, there's an interesting story here in terms of the hazards that these birds face as they're going back and forth migrating, but also the concerns that exist about their wintering habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig and others had clued me into the fact that it's not enough if you take care of the birds here in their wintering habitat, because they spend the bulk of their time south
somewhere
of the border.
Else.
Yeah, somewhere else. And that somewhere else needs to be kind of front and center if we're going to keep these birds here. So we were really fortunate, Larry. We were able to get some grant monies from the Paul A. Stry Foundation out of La Crosse, Wisconsin, and were able to travel twice to Costa Rica and to Panama to help illustrate this story. And what's great about it is that we see these birds in our backyard, but there's an incredible story of the journey that they take and the perils that they face south of the border. So we're able to illustrate that with this documentary, which again airs this Thursday, St. Patrick's Day. This is
mm-hmm.
the way I keep it in my head. Think green, and you'll hear this. 7 o'clock. And in addition to airing at 7 o'clock, it will also be streamed on our website. And we've been able to put together a really wonderful website that you can access through Wisconsin Public Television on resources that may be helpful to people after they've seen the stock. So I would encourage people to give it a look. Not only has it got some great stories, and it's some really interesting material, but it was shot by Frank Bohl, who's known, I think, to Wisconsin mm-hmm. Public Television viewers. He had worked on the Wisconsin Wolves program that we've done
yeah.
and a lot of the other bird documentaries that we've done. And I'll tell you, the effort that it takes to capture a warbler on tape is not inconsequential.
Oh, who better?
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. Well, so Craig, most of these birds are coming from Costa Rica and Central America?
You know, Larry, we have 238 species of birds that actually breed in the state of Wisconsin, and more than half of those spend the winter in Latin America. So every year, in fact, twice a year, they're journeying thousands of miles all the way down, some species going as far as northern Argentina. A lot of them set up shop in Central America and northern South America. And the bottom line is they need to have habitat for them to be able to survive down in those areas. And what we're learning now based on emerging science is for some species that are considered winter limited, it doesn't matter how much habitat we protect in the United States for them. If we don't also protect habitat in Latin America, all is for naught. So we know that we really need to be working across these birds' hemispheric ranges from a conservation perspective.
I want to give the number for people to join in since I forgot to do that earlier. If you'd like to join in with your own questions and comments, as we move along today, you're most welcome to join us. Maybe you're a birder. What fascinates you about birds? What can you do to help in this whole situation? Maybe those are questions you have. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. As you were saying, one of the messages of the documentary, I guess, is that conservation here is important in Wisconsin, but that land in Central America may be even more important. The image of a funnel is used to illustrate that.
Yeah, and it's a really apt image in that we have entire continental populations of birds from the eastern United States and from Canada, which actually funnel down into Central America, a very small landmass. And what we see are high densities of species that are packed into the forests that remain there. And as forest clearing continues unabated in Latin America for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is burgeoning populations, our birds are relegated to smaller and smaller habitats, and that's creating some conservation bottlenecks for them. And in fact, what we're seeing are a number of species which are declining precipitously as a result of loss of forests, particularly tropical forests in Central and South America. And so now there is a nationwide initiative, and I'm very proud to say Wisconsin is leading the pack on this, to develop partnerships which are focused on forest protection, the driver being conservation of migratory birds, but there are a host of other benefits that are associated with protecting these forests that are so vital, not only to our migratory birds, to native wildlife in Latin America, but also to the residents of Latin America as well.
That's yeah. That's a really important point, Larry, and one that we were able to explore in this documentary, and I really hadn't been aware of. One of the points that one of the people in the doc said was that you have to realize that these birds, and they're birds such as the scarlet tanager, the cedar yeah. waxwing, the Baltimore oriole, Canada warblers, kind of birds that are often very beautiful to see, but we don't see them that often. And when we get a chance to see them, I think people are so delighted. I use the term sky jewels, and they mm-hmm. really are. They're just absolutely, many of them are so gorgeous to look at. The problems that they face, not only in making these journeys, but being in Central and South America, they said, well, you have to understand that these birds, if they spoke a language, they'd speak Spanish. I mean, you know, home is for most of the year is down there. So you really have to work on what's happening down there. And as we were there shooting and developing this story, we came to a real appreciation of the people who are working down there to try to get people to realize that these forests that surround them are an incredible resource and as valuable for them, kept in a sustainable way as tearing them down, that there yeah. are jobs associated with an intact forest. And it goes beyond ecotourism. It goes beyond into we profiled a wonderful guy who's using he's getting up the idea of having people grow bamboo, non-invasive bamboo. Mm-hmm. So it grows, as they say, like an orange tree. You can use the bamboo for furnishings or even you can use it for scaffolding. It's that strong. So you grow bamboo easily, quickly. It grows very fast. So you don't have to cut down a 500-year-old tree in your forest. You can instead use bamboo as a way to have a building material. So people in these areas are working in really creative ways to try to solve this problem. But the press of time and the press of resources is very genuine, and, man, time's running out to try to figure out how to solve this.
Yeah. Craig, one of the things I remember from the documentary was the pressure, the number of people, the population is getting larger and larger down there. People need space. They need things.
Yeah, and you know what we're seeing is that the projection, Larry, is that the population of Latin America is expected to increase by up to 360 million people over the next 30 years. That's a lot more people in a very finite landmass, and that's going to result in tremendous pressures on Latin America's remaining wild areas. And as I had indicated before, what happens is these birds are programmed to go to their ancestral wintering grounds. So they have to go back to Panama, and they have to go back to Costa Rica. And if they can't find suitable habitat, what typically happens is they just drift around and die. And so we know that protection of tropical forests for our migratory birds is not optional, and in mm-hmm. fact, it's mandatory. And we have a wonderful project going in Costa Rica now where we're working to protect, we're working with in-country partners in Costa Rica as well as a host of international conservation organizations to protect what truly is one of the world's most spectacular rainforests. It's a big chunk of rainforest, about 300,000 acres in size on the Osa Peninsula. And what we do are run conservation birding trips. These are ostensibly trips to take people down to see birds, but we also require that they provide a donation to the conservation organization that we're working with. And these conservation birding trips have been responsible over the last number of years for generating tens of thousands of dollars of much-needed support for forest conservation initiatives, particularly for the project on the Osa Peninsula that we're working in. But just as importantly, and perhaps more so, they connect people to nature via birds. And it's amazing to see people go down for the first time. And, you know, if we're so fortunate to see something like a Baltimore Oriole in a tree full of keelbill toucans or of howler monkeys, the light bulb goes on, they light up, and they get it. We had a woman who came back from our most recent trip in February, and she said, "Now I understand, and I feel like I'm part of the larger global community, and now I really want to do something to help protect this magnificent forest." And that's what it's all about.
Now, I think that Craig is being a little bit modest here, because part of what we focus on in this documentary, when he speaks about these conservation birding trips, want people to understand that what's being done here is a change in the way the birding trips usually are put together.
Yeah.
And this was Craig's idea, and one that's had, well, and other people, but it's had great success. And I would compare it to in the documentary, and as you well know, the whole the world of hunters and anglers, they're much better in a certain way than birders are in terms of understanding if you don't save the habitat, you're just not going to have the resource. So all the way from
lot more money into it.
Trout people. Unlimited, white deer unlimited, that sort of thing. And what Craig is trying to put forth with this conservation birding model is to say, hey, you got to step up to the plate and pony up some cash if you're going to keep this resource here. And not only will this help protect the resource, but hey, you might get a benefit out of it too in terms of, as you say, your connections to this area. Hunters do it with waterfowl stamps, you know, a huge way that's provided a lot of money and saved a lot of habitat for deer, for trout. Now's the time for migratory
ducks.
Birds. Yeah, and here's a way to do it. So it's, again, this is sort of this very interesting low-tech solution to this big international conservation problem. And Wisconsin is really leading the way, and we're an interesting state to be doing it because, just to remind people, both along the Milwaukee Lake Michigan side and around the La Crosse Mississippi River side, you have two of the largest bird flyways. Yeah, they're huge. They're absolutely huge. And our state, with the water resources that we have, these two flyways, but then again, also, certainly, wouldn't you say, Craig, the rivers and lakes that we have in such abundance also encourage a lot of birds moving their way through. So we're pretty lucky to have some substantial migratory birds coming through, and it's a great delight to have them, and this is a way that we can make a contribution to saving them. But it's not the only way, and that's one of the other things that we spend some time on in the documentary, is looking at what people are doing here in Wisconsin, again, very low-tech ways that you can help make a difference, from what you plant in your yard to this problem of window strikes. And maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Craig, that how big that problem is.
Well, there are any number of issues that birds breeding in the United States are facing, and there are a lot, and those issues cumulatively are actually contributing to these significant declines that I had mentioned earlier. And there are a variety of really easy things that people can do to help conserve birds, easy, fun. For instance, if you are experiencing problems with window strikes, it's very easy during migration to put up netting on your windows, which really doesn't impair your ability to see out them. It just breaks up the reflection on the outside, keeps the birds from bouncing off them. If you have cats, please keep them indoors. Cats are wonderful animals, but they're instinctively predatory, and when they're roaming around outside, they are killing a lot of birds. One of the really fun ways to support bird conservation is by drinking shade-grown coffee. And you can I'd like to say you can start every morning with a cup of conservation. And just so people understand the importance of shade-grown coffee, in so many areas in Latin America, forests have been completely eliminated. But there are a number of areas that have that are experiencing heavy coffee production. And those shade-grown plantations, those coffee plants that have an overstory of native species, are actually proving to be extremely important for bird conservation because they're surrogate forests for the birds. They use them very heavily, and we find all kinds of migrant and native species in them. Joe had mentioned that it's very easy and fun to landscape for birds. My wife, Mary, and I have done that in La Crosse. We have a lot that's barely bigger than a postage stamp. It's about 0.2 acres. We've packed it wall to wall with great plants that produce all kinds of nectar, lots of trees and shrubs that are very attractive to birds, and the response has been amazing. We see the neatest stuff. And then finally, it's very important that we all support organizations that actually put acres on the ground. Advocacy is important, but it's not enough. And in this situation, in regard to declining songbirds, we have a closing window of opportunity within which to act, and it's really, really important that we support organizations that are putting acres on the ground, that are buying habitat and protecting it.
Talking today with Joanne Garrett, producer for Wisconsin Public Television. The latest documentary she has is titled Our Birds. Craig Thompson is a part of that documentary for sure, an important part. He's a regional land program supervisor based in La Crosse with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You may want to join in. And Gary, we'll get to you and Bosco Bell in just a minute here, but the number for you to call if you'd like to visit with us, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking birds today and the new documentary that's going to be aired on Wisconsin Public Television Thursday at 7 o'clock. We'll get more details again. I'm sure Joe Garrett will be happy to repeat the information for us. Craig Thompson, our guest of the DNR as well. Gary in Bosco Bell has a comment or question. Let's go there. Hi, Gary.
Thanks, Larry. I'm looking forward to seeing the documentary on television, and I want to applaud the people who've made that documentary. But what I'm hearing mostly this morning is talking about forest-dependent birds. And I've been involved with prairie conservation in Wisconsin for 30 years. And the amount of habitat that we're saving for grassland birds, which I believe, in my personal opinion, is grassland birds have been pushed closer to the brink of extinction, at least the local extinctions, than the woodland birds have. And one of the things that I've been seeing is it's connected with the Department of Natural Resources and the Bureau of Forestry, where they go out and there's financial incentives for people to plant rural open pastures and fields with trees. And I seriously believe that we're losing habitat faster to the Bureau of Forestry planting trees. And what we can conserve it is a prairie conservation organization. And we have two odds here bumping heads together where we're trying to preserve forest birds by wanting to encourage planting forests, but at the same time, there's a lot of what I call inappropriate forestry going on, where forests are being planted on soils that were built up under prairies, and nobody's looking at that issue.
Well, what do you think about that? This is always a conundrum, isn't it, in some ways, Craig?
Yeah, you know, it is a conundrum, and Gary makes a very good point that grassland birds are, as a group, are declining very precipitously, and there are a lot of reasons for that. In regard to the concern about planting trees in areas that are currently providing grassland bird habitat, yes, it's a concern, but rest assured, Gary, that that concern is being is under consideration and evaluation within the Department of Natural Resources, and in fact, our foresters and wildlife biologists are working on the ground throughout the state to make sure that that trees go in places where trees are appropriate and that we do try to hang on and maintain grassland habitats where we really need to do so. You know, in regard to the grasslands, there is also grassland birds. There is also a strong international link in that many of our species winter in the southern United States and northern Mexico. We're losing lots of grassland habitat, particularly in the southern tier of states where there's intense development pressure. And, of course, some species like dick thistles, bobolinks, and upland sandpipers go all the way to South America. And so we know in regard to not only forest birds but grassland birds as well, we also need to have international partnerships to address their conservation concerns.
You know, just thinking about habitat a little bit, one of the pieces that you have in your documentary has to do, I found kind of interesting, Panama. There's a buffer zone that was set up in Panama for military security, apparently, that turned out to be a kind of a wildlife refuge.
Yeah, this was remarkable. We traveled to Panama to look at the issue of ecotourism and how that helps in terms of saving migratory birds. And the area where we were was right by the Panama Canal, which Panama Canal runs through it. And I was, of course, I knew about the Panama Canal, but unaware of the fact that it's become this kind of inadvertent, fabulous habitat because it wasn't developed. It was for security purposes. They did not develop this area. And as a result, that when that area was turned over to the Panamanian government, it became, now help me with the pronunciation, Soberania National Park, which stands for sovereignty. And it's a huge deal for the people in Panama that this area has returned to their ownership and that it has one of the best parks in Panama and has been a great place for ecotourism and birding. So it's that, again, sort of surprising things that come up in the course of doing this documentary. For me, one of the other surprises was the numbers of birds that are killed in window strikes. And, of course, everybody's heard that little thud and thought, oh, geez, oh, I feel bad. Those little thuds add up, and the numbers that they quoted are millions, hundreds of millions, upwards to a billion birds are killed hitting windows in North America. We had this interesting moment when we were shooting at the Wisconsin Humane Society in Milwaukee. We were working with a man named Scott Deal there, who's featured in the doc. He's a wildlife rehabilitator, and we had gone out with him when he was collecting dead and injured birds in the morning. He came back to the Humane Society, and we didn't know he was going to do this. He opened up his freezer and started taking out the dead birds that had been collected from the weeks of finding these birds on the sidewalk and bringing them in. And here he has this lineup of these gorgeous little warblers, gorgeous little birds that have lost their lives in this way that could be prevented. You know, you can prevent these window strikes.
And it turns out Milwaukee is probably a ground zero in some ways for bird strikes, isn't it?
Without a doubt, you know, that the tall buildings that are largely covered with reflective glass are taking its toll on migrating birds, and the fact that some of those buildings are lit at night is also problematic in that those lights draw the birds in as they're migrating on their nocturnal journeys. So, you know, there are efforts afoot to try there's a Lights Out awareness program in the city of Toronto, and a lot of the bird conservation advocates have actually been working with business people in Toronto to have them turn the lights off in the buildings, particularly during those migratory periods. And it's proven to be very successful in terms of reducing the number of bird collisions. But as Joe pointed out, this may be the largest source of bird mortality in the United States, perhaps North America. And so, you know, simply hanging minnow seine net over your windows, which is really an easy and cost-effective thing to do. Mary and I have done that on one of our windows that was experiencing a lot of strikes. We're down to zero strikes now. It's been amazingly effective. Another thing we've done is we've put reflective decals on our large picture window in the front of the house, and that has reduced bird strikes to almost zero as well. So, and what happens is these birds see the ultraviolet light that's being reflected from the decals, and they just veer away. And we were having problems prior to that. So these are really simple solutions that people can do to just try to reduce the number of impacts and the amount of mortality, and every single bird strike that's averted makes a difference.
Well, in our household, I suppose it's the result of working in television, but we ended up taking old CDs that had a reflective surface and just taped them on during May and then during September, October, and it's reduced numbers for us, too.
Those are the CDs you don't want to listen to.
Right.
All right. Well, Terry, we got Terry in Green Bay, Pat in Duluth. Let's go to Terry first here. Hi, Terry.
I'm doing fine. A very interesting program today.
Thank you.
Just a kind of a second to some of the things we've been talking about, the importance of corridors, you know, habitat corridors for all types of species, be it birds or small game or large game, are important. And you talked about, you know, the funneling effect. You know, in Wisconsin, we have some property is on the Limawir River, which is south of the Cedar Wildlife Refuge, but that flows into Wisconsin down the Mississippi and so forth. But a particular thing we've been doing is putting, you know, wild bird seeds, you know, out like sunflowers and other types of seed types of strips alongside of the woodlands to provide food for all types of birds. But we've also been, over the years, using recycled materials to build wood duck houses. I'm a member of Ducks Unlimited and also Pheasants Forever. But my question, or and maybe somebody can help me out, but the wood duck houses, we use recycled telephone poles because they were made out of cedar. We knew they would last for a long time, and we could take them to the sawmill and cut them up. And we're also using cedar siding from garages. My question or concern now is we're seeing our wood duck population, where it had been spiking, it's now going on a downturn. And I don't know if the creosotes or the paint, you know, in the sidings can be having a negative effect. And I also had used pet bedding, you know, when I cleaned out the birdhouses this winter and didn't find, you know, one nest that was used from previous nesting season, and we have over 36 of them out. I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, thanks for calling. Craig, you want to...
Yeah, Terry, first, you make a very good point about corridors, and one of the things we're trying to do on a very large scale is establish connectivity, not only for birds, but for all species that move back and forth. So a very astute point on your part, and I appreciate what you're doing on behalf of landscaping and providing those little refueling stops along the way. In regard to materials for birdhouses, my rule of thumb is always to use materials that are organic or inert. I think there are concerns about having birdhouses that are stained or certainly treated wood is not a good option, and there may be problems associated with off-gassing of those kinds of chemicals, particularly in the summer when humidities are up and temperatures rise. So I've never seen studies that have indicated there's mortality directly associated with it, but it is a concern. So to the extent that you can use natural untreated wood, that's a better way to go.
All right. Thanks for that call. Pat in Duluth, you are next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. It's
sure.
So dear to my heart. I'm a wildlife gardener, and I just wanted to let people in the Superior, Wisconsin area know that there's a class tomorrow at Woodland Community School on landscaping for birds. It's from beginning to advanced gardeners, four-season habitat with native plants emphasized, small to very large areas. Lots of info. People are welcome, and they can visit the website, duluthcommunityed.org, or they can call 218-728-7463. And I also wanted to let you know that we have pine cones strung on twine and spaced very close together on our windows, and that has really helped stop bird hits on the windows, too.
That's great. Thank you. What's the phone number again that you mentioned? 218-728?
218-728-7463.
7463.
And it's tomorrow night at 6:30 until 8 p.m.
And again, where was it?
It's Duluth Community Ed, and it's at the Woodland School.
Woodland School. Okay. All right. Thanks very much for that call. And frankly, as Joe, as you have information about landscaping and such in the doc, if you...
Yes, and we certainly have it within the resources on the webpage that we'll be putting together, the Our Birds webpage. I do want to emphasize that landscaping your yard for birds can be a really delightful thing to do. When we shot some in Craig's backyard, and it is lovely. It's very nice. It's not huge, but it's very lovely. And I just have to tell people that you hardly ever get this when you're shooting documentary work, but as we were shooting, a small little hummingbird arrived from way down south in Craig's backyard, and it was this wonderful moment that actually proved what we were talking about. And do you remember the kind of hummingbird it was?
It was a ruby-throated hummingbird.
Just this gorgeous little thing on their hummingbird feeder, and I thought, oh, man, you couldn't plan something like that. But it proved the point that if you have the right plants in the backyard, you can draw them in. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And just to follow up on Joe's comment, we have one large apple tree in the backyard, and when it flowers, we have seen the most unbelievable birds come take nectar out of it, things like Cape May warblers and Tennessee warblers that don't breed in Wisconsin but actually breed in Canada. We get occasional stops from different species of orioles. So, again, if you plant it, they will come. Birds are very highly migratory, and they're going to find the resources, and the response that you get from planting the right kinds of trees and shrubs is just so satisfying. It's really remarkable.
And you can join in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. A couple of ideas from callers about preventing bird strikes. One is to stick large dead branches in pots and place them in front of windows. The birds fly to them and then realize the windows are there. So that's one. I've never heard of that one.
I think that's anything you can do to put some kind of movement so it catches the bird's attention in front of a window. I've never heard of pots. I think you might have to worry about people thinking you're also holding a yard sale. But if it helps keep birds away from the windows, that's an effective technique.
The second is a stick-on product that is clear to our eyes, so they don't obstruct our view, but they are reflective to bird's eyes.
And those are the decals that I had mentioned earlier, Larry. And what happens is these decals are transparent. They peel. You just stick them on, no effort. They peel off very easily. And they're manufactured in such a way that they actually reflect ultraviolet light. And birds are very sensitive to ultraviolet light. So they're breaking up that large glare, and they're giving them just a second of pause. And typically what happens then is they fly off and avert the window collision.
Yeah. Can you go over that a little bit, though, Craig? I was kind of, because I had kind of understood that one of the problems with window strikes is if you have a lot of plants by your windows, that the birds may view that as a green forest and head toward it. Is that a
You know, it's a function of distance. If you have plants that are immediately next to the windows and the birds come in and perch next to those plants, they can't generate enough momentum or inertia to actually hit the window hard enough to do any damage. It's when you have a window that basically acts as a mirror from a distance, and the birds see the reflection of the boulevard trees or trees in your yard, whatever the case may be, and they just go full tilt and head on into the window. So you don't want to plant plants 15, 20, 30 feet away from your windows where they can actually get a jump start and then fly head on. What you want to do is either have them very close or very far away. And then using things, my mom hangs strips of tape up in front of her windows during migration. It's been very effective for enabling her to see the beautiful views that she has from her yard, but also reducing the number of window collisions that she had been experiencing.
Scott in Black Creek, we go to you next. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I don't know if these birds are migratory or not, but we haven't seen any whippoorwills around in the last few years.
Very interesting comment, Scott, and that's a very astute observation. Whippoorwills are in steep decline, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout their range in the eastern United States. They actually winter in Latin America. And we're not sure what specifically is contributing to their decline, although it's thought that, for instance, there are a lot more skunks, raccoons, foxes, and coyotes than there used to be. Whippoorwills nest on the ground. They're very susceptible to predation from those species. They like very open forest with a very sparse understory. And, of course, a lot of the forests have become increasingly brushy, so they don't have that really high-quality breeding habitat and the abundance that they used to have. And as I had mentioned, they also wing their way all the way down to Latin America to spend the winter. And, of course, there are issues associated with not having habitat available there. So it's a double whammy, one on the breeding grounds, another on the wintering grounds, and our poor whips, which are a spectacular bird and just delightful to listen to, are really taking it in the shorts.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Scott. Appreciate it. Doug in Bloomer, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. How are you all doing today?
Just fine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I planted two golden flame honeysuckle vines several years ago, and I have had every kind of oriole and other kind of nectar-loving bird, including your hummingbirds, and I even plant morning glories alongside of it. And the golden flame starts out red-budded, then goes gold, and it is white, and it's about 2 to 3 inch long flower.
Oh, it sounds great. Comment, Doug? Craig, excuse me.
I'm not familiar with that species of honeysuckle. I would say if it attracts birds, well done. I think that's great, and that's the whole intent. It sounds like those tubular white flowers are well suited to attracting those birds that are particularly fond of nectar, and you had, of course, mentioned orioles and hummingbirds. My only concern would be that you would plant a species of honeysuckle that's not invasive, and so I don't know if this one is or not, so I would keep an eye on it just to make sure it doesn't jump and run on you.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it sounds like it's a dandy attractant for a host of species.
Doug, thank you very much for calling. And Chris in Merrimack will turn to you. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
This is a great program. You were talking about apple trees attracting birds. I've got apple trees and grapevines, and I spray both of them with a fruit spray.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's got an insecticide as well as something that killed the fungus. And I'm wondering if that's not good for the migratory birds.
In general, Chris, insecticides are considered to be harmful for most species of wildlife. Of course, I'm just speaking generically because I don't know specifically the product that you're using. But I would be very cautious about the application as it relates to fruiting trees, particularly or shrubs, particularly those that are visited by birds. And it's not just a matter of acute toxicity for the species themselves. It's also a function of interrupting food chain support. So, you know, a lot of what we see, and this is particularly in regard to people who apply heavy doses of pesticides for their to create a green monocultural lawn, what you're really doing is disrupting the food chain. You know, you're basically killing everything that's there. You're not providing any kinds of plants that the bugs can actually feed on. And so you see a chain reaction effect where the birds simply don't have anything to eat and then they move elsewhere. So I always urge caution when using any kinds of insecticides.
Can you, I'd love to hear your response to that too, Craig. You had pointed out your yard and noted that it's not a pure green yard. And you had mentioned a couple species that kind of enjoy even dandelions. What were those species again?
Goldfinches and pine siskins love dandelions. And in fact, dandelions are a really important source of early season nectar because the flowers bloom earlier than everything else. They're very important for bees and a host of native pollinators when the weather's cold and there isn't anything else available. Our yard, as Joe knows, is a veritable weed fest. Of course, a legal weed fest, but it's a weed fest. We have everything imaginable in it. You know, I keep it mowed short, and honestly, the people that come past and that I chat with say, your yard looks really wonderful, which I am very appreciative of their comments. But if they got down and crawled around on their knees, they might go, oh, my gosh, because we probably have 15, 20 species of weeds growing in our lawn, and all of them provide some kind of support for the various species of wildlife that frequent our yard.
Oh, that's great. Thank you again for your comments, Chris. Appreciate it. And Joe, let's go back to you for a minute or two here. Give us a review again of the documentary and sort of kind of what people are going to be able to see and hear, and then the date and so forth.
We're looking at Our Birds airing at Thursday at 7 o'clock. Just think St. Patrick's Day in green, and you'll be able to make a connection. Mm-hmm. It'll be repeating, of course, in the schedule, and will be available streaming on our website. But what's great about this show is it shows you where these birds go. It shows you the rainforest mm-hmm. in Panama and Costa Rica, and it shows you people working very diligently, both mm-hmm. in Wisconsin and south in Central America, very passionately to save our birds. And it truly is. It has to be a teamwork. It has to be a partnership, or these birds aren't going to make it. You're going to see gorgeous footage of the rainforest and stories about people who are working very hard, and you're also going to see some extraordinary camera work on the part of Frank Bohl, our videographer.
Yeah, and that's St. Pat's Night, 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, sounds great. It sounds great. It'll be perfect. And as I was mentioning to you off air, I'll be talking to the Madison Audubon Society tomorrow night, and I'll be doing a little plugging of that.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much.
Thank you both so much for coming. And is there information, by the way, Craig, for within the doc, I can't remember, about the tours and so forth that he does, or how people, or is that going to be, go ahead, Craig.
These trips are sponsored by the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. The Department of Natural Resources is a formal part of that initiative, and people can contact me at craig.thompson@wisconsin.gov if they're interested in participating in these trips. And I just want to say thank you to Joe and Wisconsin Public Television for telling a story that needs to be told. As it stands right now, the deck is stacked against our birds, but I do find inspiration in terms of our ability to respond by quoting a wonderful woman by the name of Dana Meadows, who said, "We have just enough time if we start now."
Yeah, if we start now. You know what? We'll put your that link up on our website, on our Facebook page. In fact, Judith might have already have it up there. We certainly have it for the documentary, but we'll also put it up for the tours that you do as well.
Great.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Joe Garrett, producer at Wisconsin Public Television, the documentary we're going to see Thursday night called Our Birds. And Craig Thompson is a part of it, regional land program supervisor. Works in La Crosse with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Great to have them along, and it was really fun to be able to talk about this. Really, the part I haven't seen it all, but the parts I've seen were spectacular, and you're going to really enjoy seeing it. I'm sure of that. We are going to turn our attention elsewhere. Coming up next, as we visit with Ray Antonovich, owner of AZ Farm in Oregon, Wisconsin, where they raise sheep, chickens, and rabbits. That's next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.